This episode brought to you by Beta Brand, the San Francisco-based source for crowdfunded clothing you can visit in person the next time you're in San Francisco, or stop by anytime online to shop bestsellers like dress pant yoga pants and now yoga jeans. And when you do, use the code SPIRIT20 to save 20% off anything on the site. But that's not the only reason we love Beta Brand. Oh no, our fandom does not stop at stretchy pants we can wear all day, no matter where we are. There are a great many other things you can do on the site, which is BETABRAND.com. Among them, you can use their Model Citizen tool to upload your own photo and then receive a custom link that makes it look like you are the main model on the homepage of their website. It's kind of a fun thing to share with family and friends on social media, leaving them to wonder whether they should congratulate you on your new and unexpected side gig or actually call your bluff. For you designers out there, you can submit your own ideas for new products and actually earn money when they become full-fledged Beta Brand products. And anyone, anytime can visit the site to vote for the new designs that will become the next product sold on betabrand.com. And there's this: when you vote and a product ends up crowdfunded into production, you get a discount. And speaking of discounts, you can always save 20% when you shop the site with the code SPIRIT20. As regular listeners to the show know, we at Spirit of 608 appreciate Beta Brand's support, their support of female entrepreneurs and women building businesses in Fest. We're big fans of the company, what they do, and we think you will be too. So check them out at betabrand.com. This and every episode also brought to you with support from Prestope by the Spirit of 608. It's the new, affordable, interactive, and community-driven alternative to traditional PR and media relations built with care by us, especially for Fest brands. Visit the site to find out more about how we're able to bring our members one-on-one help and feedback from media experts, including direct answers to your questions, recommended daily media outreach tasks curated by us, especially with your business in mind, a DIY PR resource library, exclusive media ops, and connections with other Fest founders, plus much more, all for a monthly cost that's less than what a single hour of professional PR or media consulting would cost your brand. So check it out at Prestope.com. That's PRESSDOPE.com. Spirit of 608, episode 97. You're listening to the Spirit of 608 podcast. I'm your host, Lorraine Sanders. Keep listening for stories, tips, and advice from women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. I call it Fest, and it's the future. Hey, hey, and welcome to today's show. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today. I'm excited to bring you another conversation with a woman at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, I call those things Fest. If you're a regular listener to the show or you're in our Spirit of 608 Facebook group where Fest founders hang out and talk about things they like to talk about, you'll know that that's my acronym. And I believe that things happening in that space are what are really going to make major changes in not only the fashion industry itself, but how the fashion and apparel industries affect the rest of the world. And today's guest is making serious moves in the digital fashion space. I know you're going to get a lot out of hearing from Jenny Bike. She is a co-founder of Orchard Mile. It's an online marketplace for modern luxury. And basically, this kind of blew my mind. You can find the full collections of a whole slew of designer and luxury and just sought after cool brands. They're not all necessarily, you know, the priciest of the pricey, but just really cool brands that you're going to want to know about. You can find the full collections available via their marketplace. And if you're somebody that stalks luxury brands and designer brands, you'll know that it's often very difficult to find everything that they've released in a certain season in one place. So that's where Orchard Mile is bringing something different to the consumer, but it's not the only place that they're differentiating. They actually do a lot of cool things with customer service that you'll hear Jenny talk about during our conversation. I mean, one of the things she and her co-founders, who are Julia LeClaire and Georgie Benardet, Jenny told me that the three of them actually have written, among them, 10,000 thank you notes. Like 10,000 thank you notes that they wrote with their hands. That's six hands. Well, okay, I'm assuming they're not ambidextrous. So that's three hands, 10,000 notes. You do the math. That's a lot. And don't even get me started on this whole candle thing that they have going on. She brings a lot of insight into what luxury is today, how digital shopping can, in fact, become a personalized experience for consumers. And then we also get into a conversation about how technology and data can actually change the game for individual brands and retailers and make things more efficient, less wasteful, and ultimately help more brands succeed. Now, speaking of success, Jenny has had quite a bit of it in her own right. She didn't just wake up one day and decide to launch a startup. Prior to co-founding Orchard Mile, she was the director of strategy for the Americas for Burberry. And so she brings a really high level of insight into the conversation from her time with one of fashion's most innovative brands. I think we can say that. Another thing I know I can say is check out our awesome show and episode sponsor, Beta Brand, the San Francisco-based source for crowdfunded clothing, often with a cool and yet also functional twist. You can find them at BETABRAND.com. And when you do, don't forget, you can use the code SPIRIT20 and you'll get 20% off anything on the site. Over on BetaBrand.com this week, I'm still crushing on their mile marker heels. I don't know. I think I've mentioned them before, but show me a heel that looks washable, is bendable, and you're supposed to be able to wear for much longer than the average heel. I'm not going to say all day because I don't know how long your day is, but that is the premise here. These things are really cool. I'm all about innovation around heels because I think there's kind of a feminist issue in there. Like, why are heels so uncomfortable? And why hasn't anyone done anything about this? Well, Beta Brand is tossing its hat into the ring and trying to make a difference there. I think you should check them out. And you can do that at betabrand.com. And when you do, don't forget, SPIRIT20, that's the code. Another thing not to forget, I wanted to call this out. When you hear people on the show and you think they're cool and you like what they have to say, maybe hit them up on social media and be like, hey, I loved what you had to say. I think you're cool. Because a lot of times when people come on podcasts, you know, they're talking and they're sort of putting themselves out there and they're sharing all of their knowledge and good stuff and wisdom. And you don't necessarily ever really know who's listening. And like, I know who's listening because they interact with tons of you on social media and then in our Spirit of 608 Facebook group and also through Prestope. So I feel very connected to listeners and the community, but people who come on the show, they'd love to hear from you too. So we always announce their social media handles at the end of the conversation. Feel free to give them a shout. It'll make their day, make them feel good. One more thing before we get to the conversation with Jenny, something that would make me feel good, you sticking around until after the interview, during the outro to the show, that's the part of the show that comes after the main interview, we will be talking to Prestope founding member, Melina Padgett. She is the woman behind new fashion startup, Fit and Flatter. They're doing some really cool things, helping to match women with clothes that are perfect for their body shape. I've tried it. I loved it. And I can't wait to bring you a little about her story and how she got to where she is. Now, on to the conversation with Jenny Bike of Orchard Mile. Jenny, welcome to the Spirit of 608 podcast.
Thank you. It's really great to be here, Lorraine.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to you. And can you start us out by telling us a little bit about what Orchard Mile is and what it does? How is it different from other multi-retailer online marketplaces that we may be seeing out there today?
Absolutely. So Orchard Mile is the only online fashion marketplace to offer a shopping experience that allows full access to designers' collections and unique experiences through our fashion and tech partners. So historically, the only place to find the full collections was on a brand-owned monobrand site. So say like a Burberry.com or a Gucci.com. But we've tried to make things easier and seamless for the consumer by creating one place to filter and shop the world's most innovative and beautiful designer lines. So it's as if you were shopping 120 tabs at once, but all seamlessly.
So it's really interesting because I feel like when I go and I shop online, you know, a lot of times you feel like when you go on sites that have tons of different types of brands that, you know, you're seeing like so much merchandise. And I mean, I almost kind of felt like I was seeing the full collections in a lot of places. So you're saying what is happening generally is that in most cases, sites are just showing you a portion of that and you're not really even aware of what the whole offering is unless you go directly to the brand's own website.
Exactly. And so actually European and Asian consumers have been shopping the full collections forever. They're used to it. So when you walk into a Fendi store, you'll see everything that that line generally offers. But because American consumers have been so used to shopping at department stores or multi-brand retailers that have a buyer, what happens there is that the buyer makes a bet on what the consumer will want to buy. And maybe that buyer doesn't really, you know, jive with your taste. So it's one of those things where we believe that the consumer should be the editor. She doesn't need a buyer. She's got her own influences on Instagram or social or her friends or whatever. So in that case, you know, you should have free reign to the full collection.
Okay. So we're talking about full collections here and we're talking about designer brands. Can you give us some kind of understanding of the size and scope of the inventory that we're talking about that we'd find on Orchard Mile?
Yeah. So the one thing that we actually do curate is actually the brand partners we work with. So we don't do fast fashion. We do anything that's advanced, contemporary, and above, including luxury. But the idea of luxury, we believe, is firmly changing in the 21st century. So we believe in this idea of modern luxe, which isn't a price point. It isn't about a logo. It isn't about how many stores you have, but it's about the resonance that these brands have with the modern woman today and how it fits into her lifestyle. So we have lots of direct-to-consumer brands. We have lots of brands that have used all the different channels that are distributed and wholesale and their own retail stores. Any brands from hundreds of millions of dollars in sales to tiny, tiny sales that are just startups. But really what we do is we try to find the best brands in the world and connect their stories with the consumer.
Okay, that's super interesting. And you're sort of talking about how maybe the idea of luxury is changing a little bit. What are you seeing out there right now in terms of how consumer preferences may be shifting? What is luxury versus what it may have been, say, a decade ago?
Yeah, I think, well, some things will always remain the same, right, Lorraine? It's about service, first and foremost. But how technology can affect the delivery of service, obviously, is changing. But really, what will never change is the idea of high touch and personalization. Personalization is a huge buzzword in retail nowadays, but it's actually not new, right? So when you walked into a Cartier store and the sales associate had a black book and she would write down your name and she would ask when your mother's birthday was and offer you a glass of champagne, that feeling has really been lost online, specifically in the retail and marketplace experience. So what we at Orchard Mile would like to do is become the world's first experiential marketplace, which basically is the tenant is, hey, when's the last time anyone thanked you for actually spending more than $200 at an e-commerce site? And if the answer is never, there's something wrong with that situation, right? So how can we basically connect the brand story, offer really amazing experiences, have a loyalty program that kicks proverbial A and is amazing and really surprises and delights consumers both online and offline.
Okay, cool. And just by the way, you can totally say ass on the show because I probably will at some point. No pressure, but it's totally fine. So I want to let people in on your background a little bit. But before I do that, you know, you're talking about thanking customers and having them be loyal. Are there things that we should know about using Orchard Mile now that are in place that are doing that?
Yeah, so we do a lot of really interesting experiments. So we've been launched since November of 2015. And within the first 2 months of launch, we had a feature, and we still have a feature, we're building upon it, called My Mile, which is your personalized version of, if you were to build Rodeo Drive or Madison Avenue in your perfect world based on your style, what would that look like? So we have a great British brand called Roland Murray, and they had wonderful deluxe Winter Palace candles. So anyone who had actually not bought Roland Murray, but added Roland Murray to their mile, their personalized shopping street, got a deluxe package from us, that candle along with a handwritten note saying, thanks for considering Roland Murray. And that was something that our consumers actually wrote us back about saying, wow, this is the first time I've ever gotten something for not actually buying anything, just for engaging with a site. And that's really incredible. My co-founders and I actually handwrite thank you notes too. We've done more than 10,000 of them. Every Friday for 3 hours, we sit down and we write thank you notes that are personalized to each one of our customers. Doesn't matter what they bought. So that's something that we just infuse into our company DNA because we believe it's important.
That's crazy. I mean, I have to tell you, if I added Roland Murray to my brand I was going to follow on a site and then I received something from the company, I mean, a handwritten note just alone would be quite noteworthy, but actually getting a candle, I mean, that kind of blows my mind a little bit. So
yeah. And it's not just a dinky candle. It's something that's, you know, probably retails for about $50. But we firmly believe that Amazon, just because Amazon is the leader in e-commerce, doesn't mean that every e-commerce experience should look just like Amazon. We can learn from them. We can do a lot of things and similar to them, but you can also create your own space and create something that really connects to consumers in a different way.
Okay, so one more question before I go into your background, because, you know, I know listening to this, people may be wondering, well, how can they afford to do that from a business standpoint? Like, what's the business case for going that extra mile? I had to throw the mile in there.
Of course.
But, you know,
thanks
going,
for the pun.
Yeah, like going to those links and sending free product to people, you know, probably getting carpal tunnel, writing handwritten notes. Like, what is the business case for doing that when so many other signs point to the Amazon model where, you know, you're getting a bare bones experience? Like, what makes it worth it for you to do that?
Well, we've actually seen this prove out. Our cart is probably higher than anyone else in this space today. And we think that the consumers actually, it's cheaper. And in any retail organization, they will tell you it's actually cheaper to farm than to hunt new customers. So in that sense, it's really about cultivating consumers, capturing their imagination, getting them to buy more than once, and really creating a sustainable one-to-one relationship with them that will last over time. That's what businesses are built on. It's not about flash in the pan kind of initiatives that get a lot of people to come, which is great. Everyone's excited, but then tomorrow they forget about you. So creating these memorable experiences that actually, you know, hit on all the cylinders that marketing really is. It's about word of mouth marketing. It's about PR. It's about people coming back to try the site again and driving traffic. It's all of those in one.
Okay, wonderful. So we're talking a lot about luxury and modern luxury, and you're no stranger to what luxury is from a career standpoint. And I'd love to talk a little bit about how you've gotten to where you are, because you were not always in a fashion tech startup. So you came out of college, you went into finance, and you eventually ended up at Burberry. Can you walk us through your career path a little bit? And I'd love to know if you thought that you would be doing something like this when you started out.
Yeah, so that's a great question. I actually never thought in a million years that I would be doing something like this. I actually had a strong distaste for fashion. I had dipped my toe. So after I went and worked at a Wall Street bank for a couple of years, I went and did a very old economy type startup, nothing to do really with digital or retail, but building a brand with a friend of mine who had graduated from Parsons School of Design. And I realized how hard it was. It was hard to get suppliers to take you as a small brand. It was hard to get retailers to buy into the brand without getting your prices low enough. And of course, your prices aren't low enough unless you produce abroad, but you need big volume. So it was very much a chicken and the egg issue. And I just thought, oh my gosh, fashion, I mean, it's so expensive to cultivate those relationships. How is a small brand ever going to survive? So I was kind of not scarred by that experience, but really learned from it. And I decided I didn't know enough to really get something like that off the ground. I went to business school, came out and said, oh my gosh, I'm just not cut out for startup life. I'm going to go work for a big company and have a stable job. So I went to Omnicom Group because I figured the internet wasn't going away, which actually was a little bit of a brainstorm in 2008 because most of my compatriots went to traditional industries like banking and consulting, and learned about digital marketing from really the ground up. I felt like the oldest intern there. I was 30 years old, just kind of like making copies and trying to learn. No one cared that I had an MBA, and just worked there for 4 years, worked really hard, tried to learn as much as I could. And one day I was plunking away on a strategy PowerPoint, and I got a LinkedIn request from the HR group at Burberry saying, you know, we really like your background. We think you know something about digital. Would you like to come in and head up strategy for us at Burberry Americas? And I said, oh no, I'm not going to get back into this fashion thing again. That's a culture and not a business. That's not something that I'm interested in. But they kept calling. And finally, when I met with their team, they were so wonderful. They were doing a lot of really cool things and engaging consumers. And I just thought, wow, maybe I could really learn something at this company. So I became their head strategy for 2 years. And really, from my experience there and learning the pain points that even large brands feel, that's where the idea for Orchard Mile was born.
Okay, that's super fascinating stuff. And just to go back to sort of the earlier days, so you're saying you actually ended up starting an apparel brand with a friend of yours, and it was an experience that, you know, introduced you to a lot of the challenges of the fashion industry. Do I have that right?
That's right. And it also made me passionate, Lorraine, about how smaller brands could access large audiences. And I didn't realize how the cards were kind of stacked against small brands and how difficult it was. So it really made me passionate about finding really great discovery brands and giving them a platform to reach new audiences.
So do you think any of that's changing today in terms of the chances of a smaller brand being able to succeed? Because a lot of our listeners are, you know, in the process of launching or trying to grow, you know, what is essentially a smaller brand or a fashion startup, you know, even if they're not actually manufacturing apparel. Do you think that technology is shifting that for us? Or is that same old guard set of, you know, hoops that you have to jump through in place for people trying to get started today?
Yeah. So the way that I think about brands and brand building today is that today it is easier to start a brand than ever before. There are technology tools. You can, you know, access suppliers in such an easy and quick way. There's much more transparency and pricing and all that good stuff. But I will say, to maintain growth in a brand is harder than it has also ever been. So it's a little bit of a catch-22. Once you grow your brand, how do you keep growing your brand? And if you are dependent on investment, as a lot of brands that I see are, the investors are impatient. They want to see growth. And so therefore, I do believe that's why I am passionate about this marketplace idea, because we do provide an alternative avenue to growth. If, say, a lot of the wholesalers are not buying a certain brand, we can actually prove demand. But for most brands, it's actually important for them to not just depend on the channels, the retail channels or the wholesale channels, but to actually generate demand themselves. And that's a very difficult thing to do because of all the noise.
Okay, yeah. So I was going to ask you, you know, why is it so hard to grow today and to maintain that momentum after you've gotten started? Is it primarily because we're in such a noisy world?
Yeah. I mean, then another time someone pitches me on the Warby Parker of anything, I'm going to be, it's going to be like the millionth time. Every brand wants to go direct to consumer. Every space has been spliced up into a super, super narrow, narrow vertical. And that's wonderful. That might actually get you some press in the very beginning. But how you will actually take a monobrand site, say it's underwear for a specific body type, and actually keep on growing traffic to your site and keep on converting people on that site is a huge challenge.
Okay, so do you think that's something that should stop an entrepreneur from starting in the first place? Like, if her dream is to do this specific type of underwear for one body type, or do you think she should just be aware of the challenges that are up ahead and try to figure them out as she goes along?
Yeah, I think it's a tough question. Obviously, you have to have passion and you have to have a lot of patience. But I think sometimes where I see success is consortiums. And I am already a little bit biased because I think marketplaces are a consortium. But if you can join together with a group of like-minded companies that actually share resources, maybe share a supplier so you can get bulk discounts and all those things, and create a place where, you know, whether it's a shared pop-up or whatever, so you're not, every dollar works harder within the consortium than it is for each brand individually. That's one way you can actually band together to break through the noise.
I love that. I love that. I really see that happening a lot with media outreach and attention these days as well. The brands that band together are able to amplify themselves so much more effectively than those who are trying to, you know, be the only one at the party. So
just an illustrative example, sometimes the way that I think about new brands today, there's a very famous photograph of a Prada store that's exists in Marfa, Texas. I'm from Texas. And if you haven't seen it, it's just, you know, literally a replica of a Prada store, but it's in the desert. And that's sometimes how I feel about brands in the internet, on the internet today, is that you're working so hard to drive all these people to your store, but it's literally a desert. And, you know, you're kind of screaming into the wilderness. So in that sense, to really work with partners that can help you amplify your message will actually help.
Okay, I love that. And you're right, that photo and that the image of that store is so iconic. And I love that you're pulling it in into the conversation. So a lot of people listening to this are probably thinking, okay, you have this amazing job at Burberry, like, what, I mean, why on earth, why leave that? Like, what made you, did you always think you would go out on your own?
No, actually I didn't. So I was doing strategy at Burberry, which is a really cool job. I mean, you just get to go to these cool futurist conferences all day long. And, you know, you do get to do some research and learn about what all these cool people are doing and really be on the forefront of retail tech. Every single awesome vendor would come and pitch to me and I'd just get to learn all day long. The issue with being a strategist, at least for me, is that really the best day of your life is when someone actually takes your idea and implements it. And I think in any big company, the struggle is there are 100 good ideas, how to prioritize them in a way and get resources around them. And the cycle time is long. So how could I as a strategist see a shorter cycle time for a lot of these ideas that I had researched and generated? It really wasn't at a big company. And I just was really curious. I was curious to figure out, am I really a good strategist or am I just throwing ideas at a wall and maybe making them sound good? So, you know, we all know that the expression curiosity killed the cat, and maybe this startup will indeed kill me. But I think what's been so satisfying about this journey is that you really do get to test yourself and figure out if something works or doesn't. And that at the end of the day is something that very much drives me.
So when did the idea for Orchard Mile come into your life? And I'd love it if you could talk a little bit about the moment, or, I mean, I'm sure it wasn't just like one moment you're out like in a Jerry Maguire situation, but like, you know, when you left Burberry and how that was. I mean, was it something that was hard to explain to people, or was it something that you'd been working on for so long that everybody already knew you were going to do it before you did it? What was the transition like?
I didn't even know I was going to do it. I mean, it was a complete surprise to me. And I'm sure actually it was less of a surprise to a lot of the people that I had worked with. They kind of came up to me later and said, oh, I always knew you were going to do this because you're so passionate about the retail space and so passionate about change and really creating change and manifesting change and seeing the results of change, that there's just no way that you couldn't do it, even though it's hard. And so I, you know, met two of my co-founders. I'm not saying that I did this by myself. We all came up with the idea sort of separately from different angles. I came up with it from a sort of a solving the brand's perspective, the supplier perspective. Another partner of ours had a universal cart that allowed multiple brands to be put in one shopping cart and, you know, the checkout was just one time. And then my other co-founder actually has a business development firm in luxury. So he has an amazing Rolodex. And we just built this amazing team.
Wonderful. So you came together, you realized that the three of you could work really well as a team, and you began to grow Orchard Mile. I'd like to talk a little bit about marketplaces. And Obviously that's the model that Orchard Mile is. And a lot of the people listening to the show are working on their own startup ideas. And I've found that the marketplace model seems to attract entrepreneurs, you know, frequently who have an interest in ethical, sustainable sort of fashion that is outside the mainstream, because they're trying to pull a lot of smaller brands and examples from a variety of different retailers, you know, into one place for consumers. They're trying to solve this problem of how difficult it is to find things today. So I think they'll be really interested to hear what your experience has been like trying to build one and working to build one. They seem challenging to me at the same time as they seem really efficient. What do you think the key advantages to working with a marketplace model, you know, has been for Orchard Mile and maybe for entrepreneurs considering that as they move forward?
Yeah, so you kind of hit the nail on the head, Lorraine, because the advantages are that the pipes are really different. So traditionally, retail has been a business of warehouses, logistics, call centers, all really sexy things, but that really is the bread and butter and obviously of real estate, right? But now redefining the idea of what a store is and what can capture the imagination, it's about an epicenter of traffic, right? Eyeballs, engagement, all the things that traditional media was actually. So what's the difference between a store and media now? And that's an interesting question that we can go into another day. But the reason why people are attracted to marketplaces is that it's completely asset light. So you don't have to invest in all of these hard assets. Similar models obviously are Uber, Airbnb, Amazon, Etsy, eBay. We can go on and on and on. It is sort of the darling of the tech space. But it is extremely difficult to start up because you've got two groups that are very, very powerful that you're trying to referee. So in our model, we've got our suppliers, which happen to be very, very powerful brands. And then on the other side, you've got customers who are equally powerful, if not more powerful, because they vote with their dollar. So some of the disadvantages that we've seen from playing referee are how to create rules that really benefit both sides. So for example, free shipping. We try to go to bat for the customer and say, listen, no one's going to try your brand unless the brand offers free shipping. And sometimes they haven't run the numbers, the brand I mean, and they don't realize how many people walk away from actually trying purchase because the brand doesn't offer free shipping. It's a very easy, very simplistic thing. And over in a lot of our data studies, we've seen that brands that do offer free shipping will just, you know, triple their sales within the year. It's incredible. So I think a lot of businesses also fail that have too good of a value prop. So sometimes you see marketplaces fail because they offer consumers the world and they don't offer their suppliers anything. So to be really balanced is really important to create a sustainable business. So for us, we see it both ways. I've been looking at marketplaces for more than a decade. it's been that long. And I think that, you know, the power of marketplaces will only grow, but a marketplace is only as good as the elements within it. So if you have a brand that's completely off, that turns consumers off, it actually reflects poorly on other players in the marketplace. So that's why we're very, very picky about what brands we carry, because the consumer automatically will know if you're just pushing a brand for because you got paid off or whatever, as opposed to really, really thinking it's the right fit for your customer.
Okay. So there's a lot in there, and I want to unpack some of it for people listening. If I am a smaller brand and I'm thinking about trying to be a part of a marketplace, what do you think I should know going in? I mean, are there things that I could do that would make me more attractive to a marketplace?
Yep. So as a brand, you should realize that you're joining a cooperative. It's a cooperative. So that means that any brand, any player needs to add value. And that value could be completely different. It doesn't have to be a huge search volume. Maybe you're a new brand. Maybe you're just starting out. Maybe, you know, you haven't exactly gotten the quality down. But there has to be something about you that makes you play on the same level as all the other players in that marketplace. So if we have a really fancy brand that's been a heritage brand for, you know, centuries, right? Versus a new brand that started yesterday, what are the things that that new brand can bring to the equation that perhaps that heritage brand does not touch upon? Maybe it's an incredible sustainability story. Maybe it's a way that they're produced that's completely revolutionary with 3D printing, you know, and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's thinking about the whole and actually trying to market yourself to that whole that I would advise.
Yeah. And is there anything you can say about And this isn't like a fully articulated question in my mind, but you know, I've run into some situations in the past when I'm talking to a brand and they're like, well, you know, we're part of this marketplace. So because of that, we can't do certain things on our own site because then we will irritate the people that are working with us on the marketplace. You know, so like a simple example would be we can't run a, you know, a discount that is going to make our price, you know, like lower than it is on other sites that we work with, right? I mean, does stuff get really complicated there?
Well, I think it's really built on your business model. So at Orchard Mile, we kind of knew about those deals or those Faustian deals. So we promised our brands that we would only reflect the pricing on their own site. So everything moves in lockstep. And that's what you see as a big retail trend is more and more brands need to get a hold of their pricing. You can't have your price be different on 14 different websites, right? It needs to be reflected in lockstep. And so a lot of the frustration with wholesalers has been, wow, well, you know, such and such department store always cuts my brand, puts us at 70% off even before we do it on our site. So everyone runs to the department store. And that's not a healthy recipe for a brand. So we really try to educate brands to think ahead and try to price sustainably so they can, you know, be there for the long run.
My sense is that you're actually helping them to make that happen, right? Like you're not putting it on them, like a smaller brand or even a luxury brand that, you know, that's not the tech part of it's not their specialty. You know, you're keeping the pricing in sync from your side, right?
That's right.
You're not asking them to come in and manage that whole piece of the puzzle.
No, not at all. Our technology really does mirror. It's effectively cloning the brand site and all the things that are things that the brand won't give up, such as pricing, such as their own imagery, their own styling, their own product descriptions, and literally just importing it into a shopping street that is exciting and that gives something back to the consumer in a multi-brand environment.
Okay, that's really cool that your technology is streamlining the process. Can we talk a little bit about the intersection of fashion and technology for a minute?
Yeah, I think it's been a really bumpy marriage. One of the things that I really like about this job is that it takes two completely polarized personalities, which has a tendency to be the tech engineers and the fashion people, and tries to get them to speak the same language and to have the same goals, which is sometimes the worst part of my job, but sometimes it's the most fun part of my job. So I'm still undecided. I think fashion is starting to catch up with how important technology is, but there's a lot of froth, I think, in tech speak about what people think is important. So obviously VR, augmented reality, there are all these trends that are getting a lot of money invested in them and a lot of talk and press. But at the end of the day, what matters to the retailer or to the brand is, did you deliver sales today? Did you make the consumer experience better? And I have yet to see something like that that has really moved the needle for a brand today that has been packaged up in the right way. I'm sure it will get there. So technology today for brands is, you know, they're drowning in data. They know data is important. They know they have to get emails. They know, you know, there are all these like checklist to-do items. But at the same time, you know, how to organize that on such small resources, lean resources, is a challenge from every brand that we work with, either a small one or a big one. They all don't have enough tech people. They all don't have enough resources to really dig into the data.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see that being an issue. And a lot of times when we have conversations about fashion and technology and how they collide and intersect, the conversation goes to these things like, what is the technology going to do to wow and, you know, wow the consumer and improve the shopping experience? And then also, well, how is it going to improve the efficiency and the ability to use and analyze data on the brand side? But I also see some ways that technology is changing. You know, my big thing is that technology has the ability to change the way that the industry works. Like it could make and influence systematic changes that could be more positive, not only in the way that fashion is made, but also possibly in, you know, the way the economic power is distributed among different people. So I don't know. Do you see any ways that the introduction of more technology into the fashion industry could have positive effects that are maybe outside of just like wowing us with the newest, latest, coolest like headset that allows us to put a dress on, you know, without even going to a store, that kind of thing?
Yeah, smoke and mirrors technology, you mean? Well, Lorraine, I think we were kind of talking about this even before the podcast started, but some of the biggest areas of opportunity for data and technology are to actually streamline and improve the processes that retailers and brands already have. So that, I know that one of the big areas of focus on this podcast is the area of being more green and sustainability. And one of the areas that we see is that with more data, being able to predict the demand more accurately of the types of products that you produce, even 6 months before or what have you, using data, maybe it's social crawling. A good friend of mine has a company called Trendalytics, and it's a social media crawler that actually aggregates data to predict trends in the market. So if brands are better able to not only size demand, but size trends really and how it impacts their particular brand, they can actually better forecast how much they're going to produce, how much is going to likely go on sale, and how much needs to be, you know, either put into outlet or put into different channels, which, you know, that's the whole thing with fashion. We produce too much and fewer better things. I know a lot of your podcast guests have talked a lot about that concept, fewer better things, really reconnecting almost to a vintage way of thinking about fashion, which is, you know, in the 1930s and 40s, people had one nice dress, not 30 nice dresses, and putting a little bit more money and time into picking what's right rather than just being swayed by something that's 50% off is a new way of thinking, but also an old way of thinking, which is what I like.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so glad that you're bringing this into the conversation, because I think when we talk about, you know, sustainability is a huge word, or, you know, things that are eco-friendly, a lot of times is something that is put on consumers. And, you know, what you're pointing out is that the way that a lot of brands are approaching the volume of what they're producing, it's not, you know, not just how they're producing it, but the volume and the excess and the waste, you know, that there's an opportunity out there for that to really shift in the coming years. And I really feel like companies like yours, I mean, what, you know, you're not like slapping sustainability or, you know, eco-friendly or anything on your site, but that by having more efficiency and more data, that it can ... I think help lead to less waste in the industry over the long term. And I mean, obviously not, we're not talking like 2 years from now, but, you know, maybe in a decade from now, the way business is done will be different. Do you think I'm being too starry-eyed about that? Or is that a real possibility out there?
I don't think you're being starry-eyed enough. I think the retail industry is absolutely going to be 180 degrees different than what we see today. And there's this new generation, maybe a lot of your listeners are in this new generation of people who are really well-versed in the importance of data. They're not scared of it. They're not scared of technology. And they will run these companies, these big brands. And the brands that they value will be completely different than the brands that you and I grew up with. So I'm really excited about this new brand of marketer and kind of logistics person that is willing to partner with all of these different data sources to get a more efficient process going. And also the ways that the companies will change because of it are just staggering.
Okay, well, I'm going to focus now on being more starry-eyed, because I recently have had I've read a couple of news stories that are like, you know, really calling the bluff of the conscious consumer movement and all of that. And I think it's important to pay attention to that and not be, you know, overly enthusiastic. But I love hearing that you are saying that you see a real change on the horizon in a totally different way. So thank you for going into that. And I have a couple questions that I always ask guests at the end of every show, and I'm excited to ask you. Are there any tech tools, apps, books, resources, or just a really great low-tech piece of advice that's helped you kick ass in your day-to-day life that you think would help listeners kick more ass in their day-to-day lives?
Well, I love that question. So I'm a huge believer nowadays. I think your mood is affected by constantly looking at your phone all the time. I think it actually is terrible for you. And I often advise people who are working on startups or who are obsessed with an idea to zone out of the noise, meaning get off Facebook, maybe be a little bit more selective about what Instagrams you see, stop posting and start leaning into life, which I know sounds ridiculous, but put down your phone and invest in your community and try to understand what the universe is telling you beyond what's in your phone. Because sometimes what's in your phone is fake. We've all heard about fake news, and, you know, sometimes the posts on Instagram and Facebook are a little bit too optimistic or not real portrayals of what's going on in life. And I think the reason why there's a cultural shift before, like in the 90s and the 2000s, everyone was talking about how important being an extrovert was, right? Nowadays, I think it's really important that people kind of value introverts because they're making a comeback, because they have time to assess what the signals around them are telling them and make observations and tune into what's really important. Obviously, I could talk a little bit about Trello and Slack, which every tech team uses. All of these free tools are completely amazing. It's much, much easier to streamline messages nowadays. But I really, you know, my last piece of advice is just zoning into inspiration. One of my favorite books is called Better by Atul Gawande, which really is an inspiring, he's a surgeon. He's talking about how every day is a struggle and lives depend on it. And you just have to be better. I mean, granted, fashion is a fluffy industry, but what I like about his book and how it relates to my team is that all of my teammates, they get into the ring and they play. They play really hard. They always test themselves. Every day is another day to get better. And we all internalize that messaging and we all always just try to live it. And I think you see that in the amount of heart that we put into Orchard Mile.
Well, that's great advice. And for everybody listening, we will put a link to that book in the show notes for this episode. That's the blog post that goes with the episode that you can find on thespiritof628.com. So if you want to check out Jenny's recommendation and read it, you will find it there. So you and I have not met in person and we have not hung out. But if we were to hang out all day, what do you think I would end up absolutely loving about you? And what do you think might drive me insane?
That's a hilarious question. Okay. What do you think you would love about me? Well, I think I have a deep interest in lots of different topics and I really like to try new things. So whether or not you want to go square dancing on the Brooklyn Bridge or you want to go see some weird alternative acid jazz band, I'd be totally into it. I'm not judgmental. I like to kind of get into different groups and hang out. The thing that would kind of annoy you is, well, I calendar everything. So unfortunately, my phone does go off when I, you know, it's time to cook soup on Sunday or call my mom or shower. So I do have a lot of calendar reminders. Also, I have floss and chapstick everywhere. So in every jacket pocket, in every purse, it's kind of like little reminders of things to do. I hope it helps me floss. I don't know, but I'm just drowning in floss. So I guess maybe that's annoying.
Oh my gosh. Okay, wait, I just need to check two things with you. First of all, there is square dancing on the Brooklyn Bridge. That's a thing.
No, but we could be a thing if you wanted to start it with me. Okay. We could do it.
All right. I've just like had to imagine that for a second. And then you calendar showering?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That is amazing.
That's
okay.
Kind of embarrassing.
I'm like, you know, I'm talking like scheduling goals of the future. I'm not even knocking you for it. Like I wish I calendared myself so much better. And so, all right. That's awesome.
It's pretty bad.
If you had to print a phrase or a motto on a t-shirt and wear it for the next 7 days, what would it be?
My friends hate it when I say this, and I had it as my Instagram profile quote, but I love today is the youngest you'll ever be. I turned 37 in December, and I think we're all just so, I live in New York, we're all running around trying to be big deals, and you know, you kind of miss life, you know, and just sitting down and saying, wow, it feels good to be 37. I'm going to miss this one day and I will have not felt it. I will have not missed it, or I will have missed it because I was too busy running around trying to get stuff done. And that's not what life is about. So sitting back, it's kind of in that same realm of hashtag gratitude, but really realizing today is the youngest you'll ever be. So make the most of it.
Yeah, it's really true. I love thinking about that when I have those moments of, oh my God, I'm so old. I always flip it around that way. So I love that you brought that into the show. I always close out by asking guests if you have a question you'd like to ask me, anything silly or serious, and I promise I will give you an honest answer.
Do you like cats or dogs better and why?
Dogs. And why? Well, I'm just, I don't know. I think I'm too insecure for cats. I mean, I want
What kind of dog?
I want the dog. Like, I like the fact that the dog is obsessed with me. You know, I'm vain. So I like dogs. What kind of dogs? I like so many different kinds of dogs. My last dog was a pit bull mutt rescue dog that I got when she was a little puppy and she lived to be 10 and I loved her to death. She was my first baby. And someday I will have another one in my life, but I'm taking that dog owner pause. I don't know if you've ever experienced that yourself, but you have to take a little break sometimes between pets. And so that's what I'm in the middle of right now. What about you? Cats or dogs?
So on Instagram, the only thing that I follow are chow dogs, which are my favorite kind. They just brighten up my day. They're so cute and they're so fluffy and they're so selfish. They're a lot like cats in that way. They don't want to like be all over you. They kind of just want to snack in the corner. And I feel very attuned to they're introverts, you know, I feel a deep connection with them. What do you think about a marketplace for dogs?
A marketplace for dogs. You mean for supplies for dogs or for like actual dogs?
So dogs. I mean for actual dogs.
You know, it's kind of funny. Like my husband always gets nervous when I start looking at the listings for dogs. There's and it's the name of the site's escaping me right now, but there's a place you can go and look through all of the rescue dogs that are available in certain shelters. And, you know, he'll be like, uh-oh, you're looking at the shelter picks again, because it's always like the slow, you know, it's like downward spiral into you're about to want to actually go get one of them. So I think that could be really interesting. I mean, I'm a big advocate for getting dogs that need homes, and there's a lot of them out there that already need them. But thing I'll say is that I don't know if you only like chows, but have you ever seen the Instagram feed? It's at We Rate Dogs.
No, so, but I feel like I need to do this. Okay, yeah. I'm on my phone.
It's like the weirdest, quirkiest humor, but it's this guy that he posts dog pics with this bizarre caption, and it's as if he's rating their performance like they're in the Olympics or something, but they're always doing something really dumb. And I don't know. It's a little humor. I love it. So anyone listening, if you want dumb dog stuff, look at We Rate Dogs. It's hilarious.
Amazing. Thank you for that. I'm going to add this to my bookmark list.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your story and your advice with us. If people want to keep up with Orchard Mile and all the great stuff you have coming out this year, what's the best way for them to find you and connect with the company online?
Sure. We have a website. It's called orchardmile.com. You could connect with at Orchard Mile or on Instagram. It's just Orchard Mile.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Lorraine. Bye all.
Done and done. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Jenny. I know I did. And, you know, I thought it was a conversation that brought a little something different to the show. I'll admit, when I first thought about the interview, I was wondering, you know, whether or not we were going to be able to touch on that ethical and sustainability arena that often makes its way into the show. And I don't want to have every show be strictly about sustainable or, you know, fair trade brands here. But and I always want to bring in the tech piece of the conversation. And I didn't really know exactly where the conversation was going to go. But I was thrilled that by the end, you know, it was really cool the way that Jenny pulled in her thoughts and perspective and insights about data and how technology really does stand to change a lot of things in the way that fashion is produced and sold and marketed. And I think that's going to have a lot of positive influence on industry as a whole. And I think that's something that doesn't often wend its way into conversations about more positive fashion. And so Jenny, thanks for bringing that in. I really enjoyed talking to you. And now we are going to go into our second guest spot with a founding member of Prestope. I have been really excited to be able to bring some of the founding members of our new service Prestope onto the podcast to tell us a little bit more about what they're working on and who they are. It's a really fascinating group of female founders. And so today's guest is no exception. She is Melina Padgett. She's the founder of Fit and Flatter. And she's going to tell us a little bit more about what she's been working on with her site. But quickly before she does, I'll tell you that when I first encountered her, I think we met via social media or the Spirit of 608 Facebook group. I can't remember which one, because it all becomes a bit of a social media haze at a certain point. But I went onto her site and I signed up, and she's very new. Like this is a very new site. And I got on there, and the whole premise is that it will match you with clothes that are ideal for your body shape based on what other people have said about them. And so I filled out my profile. I dutifully, you know, followed their steps. And guess what? They matched me. I mean, I found the perfect, I'm going to say, definitely my favorite leggings that I own. And I ended up buying them, and I went on the site, and I was not intending to buy anything. I was just doing it as like an experiment to see what was happening with this new fashion startup. And man, I got to tell you, these leggings, they're a pair of Spanx leggings that I basically would have never, ever bought. But I found them through this site and I was like, let's give this a whirl. And they are like damned if they're not the best things ever, you know, worn them on cross country flights, out to dinner. They're like sort of a faux leather. It's just really cool. And I found them through Fit and Flatter. So without further ado, here is Melina. Melina, welcome to the Spirit of 608 podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so glad to get to chat with you. And thank you for being one of the founding members of Prestope. I've loved getting to know more about you and your brand. Can you kick us off by telling us first where you are and, you know, where are you based and the name of your company?
So we are based in Indiana and we are Fit and Flatter.
And what does Fit and Flatter do? How's it different from other sites that we see out there today?
So Fit and Flatter, what we're trying to do is we're trying to change the shopping experience by basically showing people clothing modeled and recommended by real women versus, you know, the standard model. And we are trying to include women of all shapes, sizes, and ages in our shopping platform.
So if I come on the platform and sign up and get in there and start using it, what is it? What's the experience like for me? Like, what am I going to see? Can you describe it a little bit for us?
So you'll answer a few questions so we can determine your body type. And then you'll go on and there's a lot of different options as far as how you can shop. We have actually 9 unique feeds to ensure that you get the shopping experience that you want. But we break it down by body type. And once we determine your body type, you will get to see women who have a similar shape to you. And it's just a really great way you can go on and see really authentic reviews of why they like the garment. And we provide a link to purchase as well.
That's really cool. And you work with all different kinds of retailers, right? It's not just one brand of apparel. I could find things from a whole array of sites, right?
Yeah, we're trying to get it as varied as possible.
Cool. So building a business is not easy. And every entrepreneur goes through really tough moments, whether it's your computer imploding, as happened to me earlier this year, or it's a hard customer service experience, or you're just really exhausted. And you're not quite sure what your next move should be. What is it about your business and Fit and Flatter and the mission that keeps you going even during the really hard moments that we all go through?
Yeah, I think, you know, thinking about the end goal and kind of what your passion is, I feel like I've found something that I'm really passionate about. And I think that with what we're doing, we can really transform the shopping experience and help to make the fashion world more inclusive. And so I think when I'm struggling, I think leaning on, you know, different, you know, Facebook groups, other entrepreneurs that I talk to a lot and seeing that they're going through hard times as well and just kind of talking it out or just, you know, keeping that idea in mind that, you know, what I'm doing is something that's really worth it.
Yeah. And I feel like the idea of making size and body shape less of a barrier to finding great clothes, you know, for me as a consumer and as somebody watching, you know, companies that are trying to figure out this issue that's always been an issue. I don't know. It just makes me feel so much better because it's a horrible thing when your body gets in the way of your, you know, ability to feel confident and put something on and go out in the world and feel like you look good.
Absolutely. And it's so, I mean, that's, you know, what it was born out of. Me personally, I'm pretty tall and I have a really long torso and I studied fashion design in school. So I was really into like the fashion, you know, part of it, not necessarily, I guess, you know, specifically shopping, but shopping was always something that was super frustrating for me because, you know, a lot of retailers make things so short. And as a tall woman with a tall, you know, torso, I couldn't hardly find things that covered my butt, I felt like, you know. So I think that's why it is important to really show things on people who have, you know, similar problems with finding clothes as you do.
So you're in the phase of growing your brand. You've been inside of Prestope, and we talk a lot about getting the word out about what you do and taking action to try to let more people know about your mission and get them to come visit your site and all of that good stuff. Can you tell us what the last thing you did to get the word out about your brand was? What's the last thing that helped you that made a difference?
Well, you know, this is something that I kind of struggle with because I am not really the best at press and outreach type things like that. I think I'm better at, you know, directly talking to people. But I think as far as, you know, the most, I guess the best things I've done recently, Prestope, you know, not to like butter you up or something, but Prestope has really helped me because you know, taking little steps every day, I think, to kind of do outreach that's possible. Somebody who's, you know, really starting out and has like a, juggling a million things, I think is really helpful. But also, I have really tried to find unique ways to collaborate with businesses that don't necessarily fit the mold of coming on to Fit and Flatter as a brand partner and recommending clothing on our website. Kind of like I talked about you earlier, I talked with, you know, Swando about finding a way to collaborate with them, and they have, you know, purses and wallets and whatnot. And, you know, we found a way to collaborate with doing this giveaway that was, you know, just a unique way to try to get the different type of outreach and get the word out. And I'm pretty excited about that.
No, I love that. And I'm so on board with the idea of brands banding together and creating buzz because they're working alongside each other and they're gathering their audiences together. And I really see that as the way of the future. So I love that you're doing that. And I love that you gave a shout to Swan Doe, who is another really cool fest brand that's in the Spirit of 628 Facebook group that we have. And, you know, is a cool company out of San Francisco. So for other fest founders listening to this, what's one tool, tip, or just great piece of low-tech advice that you'd want them to know about right now?
I just read Song of Styles, Capture Your Style. And I don't know if you've read it, but it's all about perfecting your Instagram feed and everything that, you know, she kind of uses to manage her Instagram. And it really helped me a lot with, you know, what type of editing tools to use and making your photos really clear. Because, you know, I think from probably similar to you, my point of view, I always spend so much time on, you know, the photo shoot photos, but, you know, the daily photos that, you know, you want to upload to Instagram all the time, I feel like you still want to make them look, you know, as good as you possibly can. And I feel like that book has really helped me to bring our Instagram up a notch. And then another, you know, really great tool I've started to use is Flume. I've been so obsessed with it. I got recommended by this from another one of my friends with a brand recommended me to that. And it's just, I'm such a computer person over a phone person, and being able to basically use Instagram on my desktop and send direct messages and whatnot has been such a blessing.
Okay. So Flume is an Instagram tool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I've never used it. And so I will definitely have to check that out. That's really cool. And I'm so glad you brought that book up. I haven't had anybody mention that on the show so far. So we'll put links to both of those in the show notes for the episode in case you want to check them out. Do you have any special news or anything you'd like us to know about Fit and Flatter that's coming up this spring?
Well, we're currently working on Fit and Flatter 2.0, and we're changing a lot with the design of the site. So stay tuned for that. And we also have a giveaway for Mother's Day coming up in April with Swando and Motto from Australia. And we will be announcing details about that on our website and our social media. But, you know, other than that, if you haven't subscribed and signed up for Fit and Flatter, make sure you do that as well.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that. And how can we find you and connect online? What's the best way? What's the best social channel for you?
We're really active on Instagram. So all of our social media handles are at Fit Flatter. And then you can obviously find us at www.fitandflatter.com.
All right, cool. So it's Fit Flatter. It's not Fit and Flatter. So we'll go to Fit Flatter on social media. And yeah, well, great. I cannot wait to see what comes next from you and this company. And I really appreciate you coming on and sharing more about what you're up to these days.
Yeah, it was great to talk to you. Thank you.
Yeah, well, have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Melina. I love chatting with her and hearing what she was up to. If you're interested in what we're up to over at Press Dope by Spirit of 608, you can visit us at PressDope.com. For those of you who have listened all the way to the end, thank you, thank you. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your ears and your time and your interest and support of women building businesses in Fest. If you want to help us out, a quick, cheap, easy, free, totally appreciated by us a million times over way to do that is to leave us a review or a rating and subscribe in iTunes or your favorite podcast player, or simply tell another festive lady about what we're up to over here at the Spirit of 608. Last but not least, I hope you will join me next time for another conversation with a woman at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, I call it Fest, and it's the future.